Good afternoon. The case before us is Boulder County Board of Commissioners versus Health South. We're ready to hear from the petitioner.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, my name is Michael A. Kirchy, Assistant Boulder County Attorney. Registration number 21921, representing Boulder County Board of Commissioners. I will be sharing my time with Ms. Brenna Freeman, representing the Board of Assessment Appeals. And I will try to reserve 5 minutes or so for rebuttal. When Health South began this action in 1994, it did so in a very unique way. Health South came to Boulder County and filed a petition for the refund of property taxes, the basis of which it had entered into a fraudulent scheme, partially involving the creation of fictitious property, which was then transferred to personal property schedules that it's required to file under Colorado law. And allegedly, this caused an overpayment of property taxes. I think it's important to note what this case is not about. This is not a case brought by Boulder County against Health South for fraud. Boulder County does not have an obligation to prove fraud here, although that has been asserted by Health South. To an extent, that's kind of a red herring. And to an extent, it doesn't even really matter if a fraudulent scheme occurred, only that Health South has asserted a fraudulent scheme and a subsequent over-reporting of personal property as the basis of its claim under the statute. So we need to analyze that claim made by Health South against the refund and abatement statute 3910.114. Now, if it does matter that the fraud actually existed, there's plenty of evidence in the record to support that the scheme occurred. There was the petition filed by Health South to begin this action, in which the agent used the word fraudulent scheme, talked about the scheme, and attached a complaint from the Securities and Exchange Commission detailing the scheme. The affidavit is filed by Health South at the Board of Assessment Appeals discussing the scheme. There have been statements by Health South's counsel at the Board of Assessment Appeals, which are in record, or volume two of the record. And I think this court can take judicial notice of the out-of-state cases, which we cited in the opening brief, all of which were based on the same fraudulent scheme and the same set of facts that are the basis of this claim. Now, this court in Production Geophysical and Shell Western recognized that there is a sharp distinction between the valuation of personal and real property in the state of Colorado. And those cases also recognized that the personal property valuation scheme in the statutes relies upon accurate self-reporting by taxpayers. And this is unlike the real property system. In the personal property system, the taxpayer self-reports the property on a schedule and executes an oath. And that oath, in part, is that the property that's attached in the schedule exists in the county on the assessment date, that it has been examined by the person filling out the declaration, and that there's no attempt to mislead the assessor as to the quantity specifically, but also quality and age and other factors. Now, Health South did execute that oath on the schedules for both locations for the tax year 2002. Despite executing that oath, Health South now claims that it's entitled to a refund based on the false statements made in those declarations. The Court of Appeals did find that Health South could potentially prevail on an overvaluation claim despite this, which renders that oath meaningless in the statutes. It also renders meaningless the statutes that require the accurate reporting of property. Now, you can't get an abatement in Colorado just for any reason. You can't, for example, file a petition that says, I'm broke, I really need the money, can I get a refund on my property taxes? The reason has to fit within one of the four grounds in 3910.114, which constitute an illegal erroneous assessment of taxes. Although the Court of Appeals found that overvaluation might apply, they applied that term too broadly. The Court of Appeals did not find, and HealthSouth has never asserted, that the Boulder County Assessor made any error in the valuation process for this property. And in fact, the statutory process was followed exactly. HealthSouth executed schedules and the oath. Boulder County valued the property based on those schedules, sent a notice of valuation to HealthSouth. HealthSouth did not protest, and the values were certified and taxes were assessed based on those values.
Council, can I just stop you just to back up something you stated just a moment ago? I guess your position is that you can seek an abatement if you've been erroneously assessed or taxes have been erroneously or illegally assessed against you, but the error has to be your error, not the taxpayer's error. I mean, what are you reading into that?
Well, I think for the grounds of overvaluation, that word necessarily or does include the word valuation, which is the process of the property being valued. So I do believe that the error that's asserted has to be a error made in the valuation process by the assessor's office.
So if you, as the taxpayer, let's take the fraud out of it, let's say mistakenly overvalue your property, that cannot be an overvalue error?
No, I don't think that qualifies as an overvaluation. That may qualify as a clerical error under the statute.
Why would it be clerical? What if you just mistake when you write it down?
I think if you make a mistake and write it down, it does fit within the ambit of a clerical error.
Okay, what if you genuinely believe it is valued at that, and you put that down, but that's mistaken? Your belief is mistaken in the valuation.
In that case, I don't believe it falls within the ambit of an overvaluation, but because I believe an overvaluation is by the assessor's office.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. Yeah, could I follow up just a minute? I'm not sure. I may have just missed the import of that exchange, but in one of the statutes we've been looking at here, in 114.1b, am I reading that right to say even if the error is by the taxpayer, you're obliged to refund, you just don't have to pay interest?
If the taxpayer makes an error in the reporting schedules under that particular statute, then they are entitled to a refund, but not interest.
So it wouldn't only be your error, but they could be entitled to a refund even by an error by the taxpayer.
That's correct.
But you're attributing, you're sort of suggesting that if it's an error that's made intentionally, that statute doesn't control. Is that right?
That's correct, because it's not an error. An intentional act is not an error, is my argument. Now, in the production geophysical case, this court did shed doubt on the availability of refunds based on overvaluation in a personal property situation if a taxpayer fails in its statutory duty to accurately describe a personal property in the schedules. Now, that case was factually specific to a situation in which a taxpayer had failed to execute any personal property schedule, but the court's reasoning in that case is entirely applicable to a situation where the taxpayer fails and likewise fails in statutory duty to accurately report property and in fact intentionally falsely reports property. The court in that case distinguished between real and personal property valuation and did discuss how important accurate self-reporting is. It also discussed the damage that is done when a taxpayer fails to accurately report his property. And some of that damage includes if the taxpayer is allowed to recover, then they have no incentive to comply with the statute in the first place, and it renders the statutory scheme meaningless. It also causes a waste of public resources when the assessor has to go back and look at the property again. in a situation in which a taxpayer intentionally falsifies records, you have the exact same damage that you do when a taxpayer fails to report any property. And I believe it would be a valid extension of production geophysical in this case to apply it to this situation. Now, even if this court finds that overvaluation is available to HealthSouth, the unclean hands doctrine may still be applied. The U.S. Supreme Court in Stone v. White recognized the availability of equitable remedies in property tax cases. This court in the Shell Western case did apply equitable remedies specifically to a property tax refund case in the state of Colorado.
Counsel, can I just stop you there? So we have also said that equitable remedies are just favored, correct, in the tax context. Can you help us with that? When are they appropriate?
I think they're appropriate when you have an extreme factual situation, which renders the application of those doctrines desirable, and it's going to be a rare case. But I think you have that case here, and I agree that they're not favored and they shouldn't be used on a regular basis. But both courts, I think, have recognized that they are available. Now, the unclean hands doctrine requires that the party seeking recovery, that their misbehavior must be related to the specific cause of action for which they're seeking recovery. And in this kind of case, where HealthSouth's entire claim is based upon its fraudulent scheme, which caused it to intentionally overreport property, I think this is a case that justifies the application of the clean hands doctrine.
I understand that, but you know your argument, but I don't see any fraud on Boulder County. Boulder County gets a windfall, you know? How does it have standing to, you know, the shareholders might be upset, creditors, you know, whatever. But I don't see how Boulder County can basically claim unclean hands, right? And what's the nexus?
Well, the unclean hands doctrine doesn't require that the party asserting the doctrine be harmed, I don't think. Although here there is harm.
What would that be?
If HealthSouth ultimately prevails in this action, there is a loss in revenue. That money is going to be removed from the treasuries, not only Boulder County, but school districts, fire protection districts, whatever special districts there are that rely upon.
Probably already spent, right?
Probably already spent.
Yeah, how does that adjustment made when you have to do a refund there?
The treasurer either essentially sends a bill and can either reduce the next property tax distribution, or they can collect it in the future through payments. Now, the taxing entities are allowed to add that to their abatement levy for the following year, but they're still without that revenue for a year, or however long it takes until the next levy. And that could mean loss of jobs, loss of equipment. There is real damage there. And there's also harm to the system. I mean, this system relies upon accurate self-reporting. And if taxpayers are allowed to falsely report and then later recover that money, essentially using counties as banks, then the system is meaningless. The statutory scheme is meaningless.
Question about that. Do you happen to know, you were talking about the oath that must be signed.
Yes.
Does a violation of that oath implicate any kind of perjury penalties at all, or any kind of criminal sanction?
The statute does provide that there may be penalties for perjury. I think, as HealthSouth has pointed out in this case, the person that actually executed those probably cannot be held liable under those statutes because they did not, the person filling them out did not have personal knowledge. But if a taxpayer is allowed to escape accurately reporting property by just having somebody who doesn't know fill out those schedules, then I think it renders those statutes meaningless.
It's the problem of a kind of an agency representation type of thing where...
Yes, or having anybody fill them out who does not have personal knowledge of the property. Now, CRS 3910.114, I think, was passed by the legislature as a mechanism for taxpayers to recover property taxes when the assessor has made an error in valuation or the taxpayer has made an honest error in reporting property. But I don't think it was meant as a way for taxpayers to recover taxes that were paid as part of a fraudulent scheme. This cannot be what the legislature intended when it created the personal property valuation and the abatement statutes.
Sort of a novel issue, isn't it? I mean, you can read the statute, and it does seem that they contemplated that people might underreport and do so intentionally or in error. But it's hard to fight to grasp any language in there that suggests that they anticipated that someone might actually overreport property, as was the case here.
I agree. I think there's nothing in the statute that indicates that they contemplated this sort of situation.
Which is sort of problematic in terms of your argument as to what the intent is, which you must be gleaning from somewhere, the intent of the General Assembly, that is, which you must be gleaning from somewhere then other than the statute or statutes.
I think to interpret that the legislature did intend for this sort of result leads you to an absurd result, which is something that courts try to avoid.
And that is so, that is, it would be absurd simply because it returns money to someone who is engaged in fraudulent behavior?
Yes, and who has violated other statutes in doing so.
To a large extent, this argument turns on the meaning of the term over-evaluation. The question I have is, is that term ever used in the statutes or in the case law to refer to something that the taxpayer does, that is, to the reporting process of the taxpayer, or does the taxpayer in some way evaluate property such that and have the statutes or case law discussed the process of the taxpayer evaluating, or are all the references clearly to that of the evaluation by the government?
The cases that I recall only refer to the government's valuation, such as the Boulder Country Club case, in which it was alleged that the assessor had failed to value the property the same for a two-year cycle. And the only case which I'm aware of which deals with overvaluation in the personal property context, I think, is the production geophysical case. And with that, I would like to turn it over to Ms. Freeman.
That's actually a good segue for me, because I'm going to be discussing the term overvaluation.
Excuse me, could you just state your name for the record?
Sure. I was going to do that. May it please this honorable court. My name is Lisa Brenner Freeman, registration number 31175. I'm here on behalf of the Board of Assessment Appeals. I'm a first assistant attorney general at the Office of the Colorado Attorney General. I would like to focus on the term overvaluation, and I think the board's read of the term is a bit more narrow than Boulder County's. We believe that it doesn't encompass a case, and we ask for a more narrow holding. It doesn't encompass the case where a taxpayer intentionally overreports its assets and seeks an abatement of personal property taxes it paid. Although the posture of this case is a little different than the facts of production geophysical, I think that case is controlling because the salient points are the same. One, this is also a personal property tax case based on an abatement, and Mr. Kirchy discussed the relevance of that. So you have that initial similarity. And I think what the legislative history shows is that the General Assembly added the word overvaluation in response to the Court of Appeals decision in 5050 South Broadway, which was a real property tax case where there was no allegation that the taxpayer violated any of its statutory duties. Second, like the facts of production geophysical, reading the term overvaluation to include the facts of this case leads to problems when you review the personal property statutory taxation scheme as a whole. In Production Geophysical, this court found problem with the best information available presumption statute. And what this court found was that if it interpreted that case to include the facts of that case, it rendered that BIA presumption statute meaningless. In this case, we have a not exactly the same, but a similar statutory problem, and you're going to have to follow me through a couple steps here. So, and the problem rests with the statute that Justice Coates, I believe, referred to earlier, Section 3910.114.1b, which states, I'll refer to that as the interest statute, and this statute remained the same after the term overvaluation was added to the section before it. But that says that a taxpayer who paid their taxes, whose taxes were erroneously levied and collected, quote, as a result of an error made by the taxpayer, is not entitled to recover interest. They're allowed to recover their taxes, but not interest. And I think the plain meaning of the term error really connotes a mistake, a problem, not something based on an intentional misreporting. I would direct this court's attention to the cases interpreting the term clerical error for some guidance in this regard, and those are cited at the board's opening brief at pages 18 through 19. So I don't believe that the General Assembly intended the interest statute to apply to a case where a taxpayer intentionally misreports its assets. It's simply not an error. So as a result, if you read the term overvaluation to include the scenario where a taxpayer intentionally misreports, then that taxpayer would be entitled to recover their interest because the interest statute that I've discussed would be inapplicable. But the taxpayer who, for example, commits a clerical error would not be entitled to collect interest. And this simply is an absurd result. So that's a statutory problem if this court were to interpret the term overvaluation to include the scenario where a taxpayer intentionally reports its assets.
Can you help me with the definition of overvaluation, though? Can you just state what you think it means? Because I guess I understand your argument that this doesn't fall within it, but we actually have to come up with a definition that would apply to other cases. So can you help me with that?
Sure. The board, I think, use it a little more broadly than Boulder County. I think it's a mistake. It's a mistake made by either the assessor or the taxpayer.
So overvaluation can be committed by the taxpayer, unlike what Boulder County argued. That's your difference?
I believe yes, but it would not cover an intentional act. And if we look at this court's own decision in Production Geophysical, the court said that perhaps this is an overvaluation in the vernacular sense, but for, you know, three different reasons: the legislative history, the statutory structure, the policy behind requiring taxpayers to follow their statutory duties. For those reasons, the abatement of a personal property statute was not an overvaluation. And I'm asking for a more narrow holding.
Sure. You mentioned legislative history. It seems like, is there anything? Because it seems like overvaluation is sort of anti-American from the taxpayer's standpoint.
Inconceivable.
Yes. And what is the legislative, what is there?
The legislative history of which I'm aware and cited by this court in Production Geophysical is that the term was specifically added in response to the 5050 South Broadway case, where the Court of Appeals said a taxpayer who doesn't protest a real property assessment, pays the tax, and then seeks to recover that later is not entitled to recovery of those taxes based on overvaluation. So because there were only three grounds at that time to permit a taxpayer to recover its taxes. In response to that, and the legislative history I think is pretty clear, it was done in directly in response to this case, they added the term overvaluation. So a taxpayer in that scenario, a real property tax abatement without any statutory issues, no intentionally misreporting, because no reporting is involved with real property. It's not a self-reporting system like the personal property tax system, would be entitled to seek a recovery of their taxes via an abatement.
Wouldn't use that word at all, but where's your basis in the statute for this intentional misreporting exception?
My basis, there is no explicit intentional misreporting statute. I think that the analysis this court utilized in Production Geophysical is the same analysis that should be applied in this case to bar recovery. And again, it's the legislative history. It is the policy of this state to require taxpayer compliance with statutes. And it is the statutory problem with the interest statute. Error simply does not mean a mistake. It does not mean something based on intentional misreporting. That is not an error. Error connotes mistake. That same language is in 3910.114. That lays out the grounds for an abatement. It's something that was illegally assessed, or there was it was done erroneously. Again, it's repeated.
Just to follow up on that, so your point is, error there can't just mean wrong, the wrong figure. It has to be the wrong figure as a result of negligence rather than something, what, more culpable in terms of a mental state.
Yes, Justice Coates.
So would you say, we can say intentionally, but it gets to be kind of hard to make these motive or really mental state distinctions. Would you say if you acted recklessly in putting that figure down, that would not be included as error? Only if you acted negligently, how do we make those kind of distinctions?
I would submit that line is fair. I think negligence is a fair place to interpret the plain meaning of the word error. I think error does not connote something intentional or something reckless, and I think that trial courts are well equipped to make determinations as to something was intentional or reckless. So yes, I would draw the line at negligence.
And in this, earlier in that very sentence, to use the cognitive term erroneously, talking about the government, I guess, whether the tax were erroneously levied. We wouldn't interpret erroneously there to mean negligently. We'd mean that they levied something that was wrong, that they shouldn't have levied, wouldn't we?
I think you can have a similar interpretation of the term erroneous with error. I think that they connote a similar sense. And I think that, again, reinforces the fact that it is not, that overvaluation is used to flesh out the term erroneously valued. And I think it, again, reinforces the position that it shouldn't include the intentional act. I'd like to save the 2 minutes.
Wouldn't go to the unclean hands to resolve this case?
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
We didn't brief the issue.
Right.
I didn't think it was appropriate for the board didn't think it was appropriate manner to decide this case. They decided it on statutory grounds.
May it please the court, I am Norman Wright. Number 30625, Greenwood Village, Colorado. I represent the Appalachian HealthSouth Corporation. The cornerstone of property taxation, often called ad valorem taxation, is that a taxpayer should pay his or her fair share of taxes based upon the value of the property they have in the taxing jurisdiction on the assessment date. We would submit that Section 3910.114.1A, the abatement statute, allows an abatement if there has been an overvaluation of the property as long as a timely petition is filed. Section 39.2-125 authorizes the Board of Assessment Appeals to hear decisions of the County Board where there has been a denial of an abatement in a de novo proceeding. The Board of Assessment Appeals did not conduct an evidentiary hearing, but rather dismissed this matter on a motion to dismiss, in essence equivalent to a judicial equivalent of a motion for summary judgment. They had found that there was no clerical error, and that may be true, although again, there's no evidence in the record, so we're not sure entirely where the errors came from. And query, if the person filing the tax returns had no knowledge that the tax base data was improper, wouldn't they have submitted this in good faith? Secondly, the assessor argues that the assessor did not overvalue the assets reported, the BAA found that the assessor did not overvalue the assets reported by the petitioner. While that is true, it is wholly irrelevant to an abatement proceeding. What happened in the date and year of assessment has no bearing on whether or not you're entitled to an abatement. An abatement for overvaluation means, and just aside, I would submit that the term overvaluation in the ad valorem context means if you have paid taxes in a value that's in excess of the fair market value of the property, you have been overvalued. And that's what we urged here. That's what the Court of Appeals didn't find we were overvalued. They found we had the right to have an evidentiary hearing before the Board of Assessment Appeals to demonstrate whether or not our property had been overvalued. Now, the government has made a lot of assertions that HealthSouth intentionally overreported its assets. That's not true. The fraudulent scheme that existed, if one existed, was conducted by officers of the company for their own personal benefit, and their scheme involved inflating earnings on sales that did not occur, and then to account for cash that obviously doesn't exist, they pretended that cash was used to purchase assets that didn't exist. Those assets were then recorded on the database. So in fact, they don't exist.
So, right?
Yes, sir.
I don't quite understand how that doesn't indicate an intentional fraudulent scheme on behalf of the company.
Because it's an unauthorized act by...
Because it's ultra-virus? Of course it's ultra-virus. But so what? It's still an intentional act in overstating values that we ascribe to the company. The company is the one that has to pay, that has the obligation to self-report, right?
Yes, the company has not.
So the fact that the minister doesn't understand, the administrator doesn't understand what the chief is doing, who is falsifying things, that doesn't matter when we're considering the tax consequences from the point of view of the corporation. Does it?
I would submit, sir, that it does.
Why?
It's all the difference in the world.
Why?
Because the ad valorem tax depends entirely on whether or not value and assets exist. It gives the state and its subdivisions the constitutional authority to levy an ad valorem tax. If the property doesn't exist, no matter why it doesn't exist, there's no authority to tax the property. And this.
What about the fact that this is a self-reporting system?
Again, I think that's
not
a
relevant
issue.
Why?
Yes, it's a self-reporting system, but that does not relieve the assessor of his or her obligation to find out whether or not that reporting was accurate. And
how is the assessor supposed to do that?
Well, the assessor has audit power.
Go out and audit the company's facilities, that kind of thing?
And they do that all the time. Mm-hmm. Yes. But what's really important here is this was an overvaluations case. We're not underreporting assets for the benefit of the taxpayer. In fact,
wait a minute now. This was certainly for the benefit of the taxpayer.
No.
Of course it was.
Paid more taxes than it would have otherwise owed.
But they only did that because it benefited them to a greater level.
It didn't benefit the corporation. It benefited.
It certainly benefited the value of the stock and all those other things for a while. So that was a benefit to the corporation, wasn't it? Or was it all directly looted and never even went into the value?
We don't know because there's no hearing. But no, I would submit it didn't benefit the corporation.
Oh, okay.
But even if it did, it didn't have anything to do vis-a-vis reporting taxes and paying taxes to Boulder County. Once the errors have been discovered, whether intentional or not, and now information is provided to the assessor through the abatement process, that's when the assessor's duty arises to verify whether or not these new facts are in fact true or not. And if they are true and taxes have been levied on property that wasn't there, then there was an obligation to refund those taxes.
So we don't consider, Mr. Wright, a letter by the manager as a judicial admission that there's a fraudulent scheme and so forth?
Fraudulent scheme is not vis-a-vis the county. The fraudulent scheme...
Well, it doesn't matter. It was, sure it is. It's vis-a-vis the county when they throw out the self-assessment forms.
No, with all due respect, I would say it's not.
Yeah, well, what
because
is it?
There has to be a benefit to the person asserting the misinformation and a detriment to the person who acts on misinformation. Those facts aren't present here. The county receives more money than it's entitled to. Therefore, there's less money required from the other taxpayers. And all the abatement process is supposed to do is reverse that situation. If you've overpaid taxes, now you get an abatement. The abatement levy process allows the political subdivisions to spread that loss. There's no permanent loss of revenue to the county. Let's be clear about that. There's absolutely no personal loss of revenue to the county. The county picks the money up in the ensuing year. So the county is made whole. They are never at a disadvantage.
But I don't understand your point. Because are you relying on the fact the money was distributed to the school districts and so forth?
Yes, certainly the money was distributed to the school districts, without question. But once the error is uncovered, and if there is an abatement granted, whether the abatement is granted for any of the reasons allowed in the statute, then those same political subdivisions, and without impact by Tabor, are entitled to put that levy item as a line item in their budget and recoup the taxes from all of the taxpayers, the very same taxpayers who benefited in the prior year or years by the windfall effect of not having to pay their fair share because somebody overpaid.
So you would define error in terms of Justice Coates' questions as what? How would you define it? The word, error.
I think to some extent you have to define error in the context. I think in the context of the interest statute, I think the legislature intended the term very broadly. If for any reason the taxpayer contributed to the mistake or error or reason for the refund, if it's the taxpayer's fault, then the taxpayer doesn't get interest. That only seems like a fair result. They shouldn't be able to intentionally overreport. In fact, the legislature this past year has addressed that same kind of situation in the income tax arena. It has been believed for a number of years that because Colorado's interest rate statute on income tax refunds is high, that some taxpayers were intentionally overpaying their income taxes, and then within the period to file a refund request, and they're able to earn more money by parking it with the state of Nebraska, or state of Colorado, than they could by putting it in a bank. The legislature addressed that situation. Now, if there's a showing that you intentionally overpaid your income taxes either by the return or by over withholding, you again don't get interest on the refund. I think there's a recognition that the legislature knows how to address that situation. The government has argued production geophysical addresses the policy reasons why the court should reverse the Court of Appeals, and I would submit it does not. Production geophysical, I would submit, is the far extreme of what should happen under the abatement statute, and it's a special exception, to the normal rule that as long as you qualify under one of the four conditions for the abatement, you get the abatement. And the policy was clearly announced by this court in production geophysical. If you encourage or provide a reason for taxpayers to not report at all, now we're going to have a lottery situation. We don't report the taxes, and therefore the assessor has to go out and try to figure out what the number is. And if he sends a notice, and gee, we're lucky, the assessor underestimated what it should be, the taxpayer will remain silent. And that encourages then the taxpayer to not pay his fair share. That's why...
Why doesn't that same rationale apply to the taxpayer reporting too much?
Because the taxpayer hasn't gained an advantage.
Well, no advantage. He hasn't lost anything either. I mean, he hasn't lost anything either because he's able to come back by your theory and get the abatement.
But he's only made whole. He doesn't gain anything. He's only made whole. There's no incentive to do this. No one overreported their taxes because they wanted to give the county excess money for any reason. It's pretty clear, I think, that the reason the overreporting happened...
But doesn't that incentive exist in exactly the situation you're talking about, where the scheme, as the case may be, is to overreport in order to over-evaluate assets, which has some benefits, whether to the corporation or not, and then overpay taxes in support of that. And so refunding those taxes seems to me to have the same kind of effect that it does in geophysical as far as that policy is concerned, because it has no consequence for that over-reporting and thereby facilitates the over-evaluation for other purposes.
Well, it does have a consequence. It paid more taxes than it should have been obligated
to pay. But you get them back at the end.
That's not a benefit. That's at best a zero-sum game.
Well, the benefit goes back to what you were discussing with Justice Mularkey, and that is there's certainly a benefit to the executives at HealthSouth that were involved in this activity, if not to HealthSouth itself.
Well, perhaps to HealthSouth's officers there was a benefit, but it certainly wasn't to HealthSouth, the company, or its regular stockholders. It was greatly damaged by this system. And when the system was uncovered by people who were responsible, those people were prosecuted and put in jail.
Oh, was it an embezzlement scheme? I'm just not understanding the complete explanation of the fraud. You're characterizing it as a fraud against the corporation itself, right? So,
correct.
So what did the officers do? Pocket the money?
Not directly. It wasn't one of those kind of frauds where you under-report your income and keep, revenue. No, it wasn't one of those kind of schemes. What they would do is artificially inflate sales. Let's say sales for the month were $100,000. They would show the sales as $120,000 because by showing increases in sales, they're telling Wall Street, we're growing our company. And when you're growing your company, the reaction by the public in buying the stock is, this looks like a successful company, and then more and more people want to buy the stock. Economic theory suggests the stock prices go up. But if you only inflate the sales, then at some point somebody says, well, where's the revenue for that extra $20,000 in sales? So they had to explain where the revenue went. And they said, we use the revenue to buy more assets, again, so we can grow the company. Now we have a bigger asset base to grow the company. So that's why this, the database, the asset ledger, if you will, would increase.
So the stockholders profited, right?
Some stockholders profited, but not the new stockholders.
Well, I mean, it seems to me your argument about benefits really focuses on the fact that at the end of the day, people go to jail and the stock falls and there's no benefit. But on the way there, there was benefit to officers and there was benefit to the corporation. If it had worked and not collapsed as it perhaps inevitably did, the benefit would have been more enduring. And the point of all of which is, if there's a benefit to anyone at all, then I'm having trouble with the distinction of production geophysical.
It's not benefit that's the linchpin of geophysical. I would submit it's incentive. There was an incentive to misreport in the property tax system to benefit the property taxpayer themselves. They are playing the lottery, if you will, that if I don't report anything.
So if we accepted your argument, it wouldn't be the same incentive, but you'd have to acknowledge that it would have an enabling effect.
It may have some enabling factor, but I would submit to you that that's for the legislature that to then resolve. There are certainly many instances in which property gets, if you will, innocently overreported. In fact, pretty frequently, the reason it gets overreported is there were retirements of assets at a particular location. And companies are pretty good at knowing when to put things on the asset ledger because there are invoices to pay for it. But when somebody at the local site retires something and has desks or computers carted off to the junkyard, if you will, or even sold for salvage, that never gets potentially noticed by those who are in charge of fixing the database. So there are very many times, in fact, there are companies out there who will come in and audit a corporation to find out if their database has gotten stale and includes a lot of overreported property, and they file refund applications all the time, and those are granted. Again, there's the same in overreporting, perhaps not with the same scienter, if you will, but the same reporting exists. And so that's the kind of situation that the abatement statute was meant to address. After the 50-50 case that was talked about, Broadway case, the legislature finally said, enough of this. We're tired of trying to figure out whether things are clerical errors or if they're mistakes, and whose mistakes? Does it make a difference if it's the taxpayer? Does it make a difference if it's the government mistake? We're going to open it up. If you're overvalued, you get a refund. And that's the third error that the Board of Assessment Appeals made. They said there was no overvaluation because overvaluation depends on facts. Well, of course overvaluation depends on facts, and they cited for that proposition the Boulder County case. But the Boulder County case really has nothing to do with this. What the Boulder County case focused on is another subsection in the abatement statute, the so-called mutually exclusive provision. If you file a protest during the protest period, you then can't go back and get an abatement if it's based on value. And the Boulder County case dealt with a somewhat unusual situation in which there was a second year appeal in the biennial system for real property. The second year case held that there was an overvaluation, and therefore the taxpayer said that's a illegal assessment then, because the tax has to be the same for both years, absent some facts that clearly weren't present in that case. So the Board of Assessment Appeals was just wrong when it said that if facts are based upon valuation, you're not entitled to an abatement, and that's just clearly wrong. All the Court of Appeals opinion below does is grant the taxpayer the right to go back to the Board of Assessment Appeals, and if they can prove that there was tax upon value that did not exist because of these phantom assets, then they're entitled to an abatement. The statutes really couldn't be more clear on that point. And to now graft that there's somehow some unclean hands aspect because some of the corporate officers were doing bad things, those bad things weren't aimed at the Boulder County, weren't aimed at the taxpayers of Boulder County. They're frankly just irrelevant. In fact, if there was an unclean hands doctrine, I would submit that when the companies sought income tax refunds, because the other impact of this is they overpaid income taxes, you would be seeing cases out there where states or the federal government had denied income tax cases. Lastly, I want to address the precedent of the other three HealthSouth cases that are cited in the briefs. I would submit two of those three cases, although the decisions appear to be adverse to HealthSouth, actually reinforce HealthSouth's position. The only case that really supports the government's position is the Alabama case, but there's a clear distinction because the Alabama abatement statute requires error, and the court there said error can't mean something intentional. Here, we have the overvaluation reason. The Georgia court had overvaluation as a reason, and the lower court in Georgia granted refunds to HealthSouth. The reason they lost on an appeal is that it was discovered that HealthSouth, the parent company, was not actually the taxpayer in Georgia. It was a subsidiary corporation. The refund applications had not been made in the real party in interest name, ergo they weren't entitled to the refund. Similarly, the third case in Connecticut. Connecticut has two refund statutes. One is very similar to ours, has a one-year statute of limitations. If there's an overvaluation or error in the assessment process, you get a refund. The court doesn't talk at all in that case about whether or not the taxpayer got the refund, and I submit to you we'd be able to prove that they did get the refund for the 1 year. What the Connecticut case deals with is there was also a second statute that says if the assessor becomes aware of information that his assessment is incorrect, the assessor may correct his role and rebate taxes. What the taxpayer tried to do, HealthSouth, is file a mandamus action to force the assessor to do that based upon the information that HealthSouth now wanted to submit that the overvaluation had occurred. And the court there said, no, that's an inappropriate use of mandamus. That's a discretionary act by the assessor. The assessor may open up the case. The assessor here refused. We're not going to force the assessor to do that. And that's all that case does. HealthSouth has done business throughout the United States. The only four cases we can find are this one and the three that I've just talked about. I think that leads to the presumption that most jurisdictions just granted the refunds. Clearly here, the Constitution only authorizes the county to tax property that exists in the state on the assessment date. We think a hearing will be able to prove that's not the case. We should have the right to do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. With respect to the other cases, I certainly didn't cite those
for the proposition they were controlling in front of this court. Obviously, all those states have different abatement statutes and the language of those statutes controls. But the Alabama case does have a very good discussion about what constitutes an error, and also an application of the clean hands doctrine to these exact facts. With all those cases are helpful for describing the scheme that resulted in the facts here. I also don't think it's a fair statement to say that all the other states granted refunds, because not all states have abatement and refund statutes.
Hey, remind me, what is the amount of the refund request?
It's in tens of thousands of dollars. I honestly don't recall. Okay. I think it is cited in the Court of Appeals opinion.
What's your position on the dissent, the statutory analysis by the dissent in the Court of Appeals?
39-5-116. 116.
Yeah.
On the whole, I agree with the dissent. I think 116-2C does open the door to allow equitable considerations that are used in the language depending on the basis of the claim. I also note that under 2A, I think it's a violation of 2A either to falsely report your property or to undervalue your property. So you should have the same analysis. Real quickly, El South has alleged you can't tax or value property not in existence. Under our statutory scheme, the way the assessor comes to know what property there is in the jurisdiction is because the taxpayer fills out a personal property schedule and signs an oath that says this property is in existence in the county on the assessment date. And I'm out of time. Thank you.
On behalf of the court, I want to thank all counsel for your arguments. The case stands submitted. The court will take a 15-minute recess before hearing the next case.
My first time.
Yeah.